DW Africa Link.
A throne is often seen as a symbol of tradition, power, and history. But for Ogiame Atuwatse III, the Olu of Warri, it is a platform for transformation. From championing economic empowerment to driving education and innovation, he is redefining what it means to be a monarch in the modern era. His vision isn't just about preserving the past. It's about building a future where his people and Africa can thrive. How is he using his influence to spark real change? What challenges come with modernizing leadership while honoring deep-rooted traditions? And how are his developmental projects shaping lives? Stay tuned. My name is Josie Mahachi. Welcome to Africa Link, the podcast that connects you to the stories that matter from Africa.
Africa Link, every weekday here on DW.
Crowned as a king at a young age, Ogiame Atuwatse III, a Nigerian traditional king of the Kingdom of Warri in the Delta State, carries the weight of centuries-old tradition with utmost respect while embracing the demands of a rapidly evolving world. As the Olu of Warri, he's redefining what it means to be a modern monarch, balancing heritage with innovation, culture with progress. But what does it take to modernize a throne without losing its essence? How does his Elevate Africa initiative shape the future of young Africans? Well, I had an exclusive chat with the Olu of Warri, Ogiame Atuwatse III, who shared his journey, the challenges of leadership, and his vision for a transformed Africa.
We've been hearing a lot of questions, people wanting to know how a young king is really faring, especially in this high position on the throne. But the first question that I know many people would want to know is, what does it take to become a king?
Obviously, I was born to a king who was also the son of a king. So I am of the bloodline. So there is that. But there are others who are born of the same bloodline and they are not king today. So clearly there is a divine aspect. There is an aspect of fate, of destiny, because this is not one where there is rotation of ruling houses, where you go out there and prove that in this house I should be the one most qualified. That doesn't apply. So there is certainly a serious aspect of destiny and being raised properly, accordingly. It could have been any one of the sons of my father. It could have been anyone. And kudos to my father. He raised us all to be kings. So I suppose preparation meeting divine opportunity. I guess that's the simplest way I can try to explain it.
And how many sons did your father have?
It's not exactly a large polygamous setting where there's like 20. My grandfather had a lot of sons. But in this case, the number is smaller, yeah.
And you're the eldest?
I am the eldest.
Okay. And does it have an age group? You know, when you have to become a president in Africa, it's usually either you're 40, you're 45. Does it have any age group for you to become a king?
I believe it's obviously the universal age of suffrage. I think once someone is 18 years old, if it so happens that his predecessor didn't live long enough, once you're 18, I believe it can be considered that this individual is qualified for the position, yes.
All right, then our platform is more for Africans. It's not really more about Nigerians. Nigerians might understand, but I grew up in Zimbabwe and watching the movies from Nigeria, it always shows as if to become a king, you have to be fetish, you use all these, I don't know what they call them, I think juju or whatever. Is that what really happens?
You're talking about a spiritual thing. You need to be able to tick the box, as it were. stand before certain things and then you are confirmed that indeed this is the person, this is the person. So I did go through that process of standing before an authority, and I passed, as it were. Now that you are in that position, there are things that may be required of you. And I can only speak for myself. I made it very clear at the beginning that this is my fate. I did not go and apply for this thing. But yet the thing has said, in the midst of all, that is the king. And the king has come forward to say, but this is who I am. And it still says, you are the king. So for me, it's not about branding anything fetish or whatever. It's simply saying that, yes, it is a spiritual thing, something that you cannot see. And because we're talking about foundations, and if a thing is coming to me to say, you must fulfill this, otherwise there will be a problem. And you cannot ignore it and say, do your worst, because you will be challenged. So you have to be a man of faith to be in this position, whatever your faith is. My faith just happens to be a Christian faith. And even in my understanding and my journey in Christianity, even for me to stand before the oracle, it was a big deal. A lot of Christians felt, do not stand in front of the oracle.
That's actually why I asked this question, because I've seen comments on your Instagram, and I always like to ask questions that people are actually asking so that you can say it yourself and explain to them. And it's so clear. It's quite inspirational, really, for you to come out and say, look, I'm a Christian, and besides being a king or the oracle, they can work together hand in hand. And it's very good, especially if it's coming from you explaining how it happens. But also talking about now leadership principles that guide you as the Olu of Wari. Can we just talk about that?
The earth itself, it's alive. Christian, Muslim, fetish, animist, whatever, the earth is alive. And the earth knows truth. It does. So when matters are brought before you, as king, you sit as king and as judge, you have to always speak in favor of what is fair and what is true. Oftentimes, it's not easy because those on the other side, that's why the matter has come. Somebody is being oppressed. Somebody is being denied. And that is why justice's eyes are covered, blinded, so that you're not looking at the face of who is sponsoring the problem. And in always speaking for what is right and what is true, God affirms that. The earth itself, it affirms it. And I think that also gives a further stamp on your reign in the spiritual and even in the physical, that this person is king. Because you're not only a custodian of human beings, you're a custodian of the land you are on. And the land is alive. So that's the way I see it. Whatever the case, good, bad, ugly, witches, wizards, Christians, Muslims, they are subjects in this kingdom and I am their king. And they all have equal access before me. And when the matter is brought before me, I close my eyes, hear equally, hear fairly, and as much as possible, respond.
Do you miss your life before becoming a king? The normal life where you don't have to make decisions, people coming to you, wanting to meet you. Do you miss that?
Well, yes, because naturally, or I am an introvert. So obviously now I have a persona that is dealing with a lot of people. But once the day is over, I'm able to retreat back into my normal personal and family life. As much as possible, I try to balance it, take little breaks in between, so I do not lose myself in this position and in this office.
Right, it can never be easy. But how then do you balance traditional leadership with the modern governance needs of your people? Things are changing very fast, especially even looking at the fact that now the world technologically, AI and stuff, how do you then balance the two?
There must be balance. As you said, the world is changing and traditional institutions cannot sit back and say, oh, we want to remain strictly traditional and not flow with the modern world. If that is a non-compromising stand, the world will move on and will leave the traditional institutions behind. And that would be a disaster. And traditional institutions have their place. I have given an analogy before where as Africans, we get our identity from our traditional institutions. And the rate at which the world is changing, it's subtle, where a global identity is being offered to the world. And that global identity is not originally African. So it may be fun and convenient, but it's not actually true to who we are. Africans who are at the forefront of technological advances, they actually need to work hand in hand with traditional institutions so that they can get their inspiration from them in going about creating a modern technological identity for Africa. It has to come from within. And the best place for things, for looking for inspiration from within, you can't ignore the institution that has safeguarded, that has been the custodian of that African identity. So for me, there's no separation of the two. None, absolutely.
Right. And now talking about initiatives, as you're saying that you're actually planning to carry your people along, of course, not forgetting the past. What initiatives have you championed since becoming a king to promote economic growth and development in Wari and beyond? I understand there was an event that you just did a few months ago, Elevate Africa. So obviously I know it's not just focusing on Wari, but also Africa as a continent.
What we have done this first 4 years is trying to frequently magnify, encourage what we already had. Where we were doing things once or twice a year, we're now making it quarterly. So there's a program that we do every quarter, changing up the guard, every community coming forward to display themselves before the king and the kingdom in the palace. And what that has done, in turn, the king now goes to visit those communities, because we're talking about over 200 communities. And what we're finding is that for the first time, I am the first king in almost 600 years who has gone to these communities and villages.
It was always the other way around.
It's always been the other way around. And that has been the tradition. The king does not move unless if he has to. But now the king is saying every quarter, I will move. And it has an untold effect, just that he showed up.
I know.
You know, it lifts them up. And so we found that the king, the palace has been far away from the people. Yes, there are chiefs and there are people who are supposed to be bridging that gap. But a lot of things slip between the cracks. So with that, now everybody shows up and you're seeing them, they're seeing you. It's an opportunity for them to say, these are the problems we are facing. Because oftentimes it just appears like the king doesn't care. And it's every 4 years, politicians will come, campaign, and go. So all they see politicians, and it almost looks as if it is the politicians we deal with because the king is just busy sitting down. So even that in itself makes them reconsider. And then we're now in a position to use our name, our influence, to attract NGOs, attract private monies to say, Your Majesty, is there anything you need? Oh, personally, I don't need anything. But in this particular village, in this particular community, perhaps there's something you can. So far, so good.
Right.
Yeah.
We're talking of Africa as a continent.
Yes.
Elevate Africa. What is that all about?
Narratives, storytelling. Africa's stories, unfortunately, have not been told well. They haven't been told well. And a few non-African media outlets have come to try to tell an African story. And obviously it's told with their own bias. Even if they mean well, it's told in their own bias. And we look at data is what is really hot right now. Data, stories, content. And we're really seeing pressures from Netflix, from Amazon, from everyone. They are looking for African stories, African content, because the world has now had a level playing field where it's no longer just Hollywood or Bollywood. People are watching Korean content. People are watching, or they are even demanding for African content. And the quality of production is coming up. And because everybody has seen the retelling or another adaptation of so many Western tales, they're looking for something different. I want to use Marvel. I use it as a very common example. The Marvel Cinematic Universe, you know, all their stories are the same. But when Black Panther first came out, Black Panther really shook the world because it gave the people, gave the world an impression of a fictional African kingdom. And That movie inspired so many people. Everybody was shouting Wakanda. I had not heard anybody shout a fictional African kingdom. They were shouting Wakanda. Before that, in the late 80s, with Coming to America, everybody was shouting Zamunda.
Zamunda.
Zamunda, and then decades later, Wakanda. And so that just shows you that the image of a prosperous, organized African entity is desired. People want to see it. Africans want to see it. Africans in diaspora, in the Caribbean, in America, in Europe, they want to see it happen because it speaks to their identity. You know, however long they've lived away from the continent, and they feel this is something that we could rally around. So Elevate Africa is not about to release a movie now, but it's about to tell stories, give Africans a vision, a belief that the way the world has depicted you as an African, it has to change. And it has changed, but it starts by you believing in yourself and seeing influential Africans standing, you know, because we are visual people. And the more we see positive, encouraging examples, the more we will be encouraged and believe that this thing is possible. So in a nutshell, and there's so much more about Elevate Africa, but just to try to make it easily understood.
But you also grew up in the house with your father. Like you said, you saw what he was doing. Then after that, your uncle, obviously, I know, I assume you're close to him. You were learning a lot from them. But you're also now shifting and changing some of these things that you're going to the people. There might be chiefs who are unhappy with this. There might be people who are also unhappy with this. What are some of the challenges that you faced so far as you became the King of Wari?
You have said it very well. These people who you've mentioned, the chiefs and the elders, the truth of the matter is they actually mean well. 100% to themselves, they mean well. Because as far as they're concerned, if it's not broken, don't fix it. And they have been, it's how they were raised, it's how they've done it now, they're old men. They're not going to change now. They're not. And this is not unique to Wari Kingdom. I believe it's something you will see everywhere where there is an institution. There are people who will be like, yes, you've come in, you're young, but this is what has given us the esteem, the reputation that we have. We have been doing it this way. If it was not working and it was sinking, they probably would have changed a while ago. So you can't blame them. But you come in and you now say, look, thank you for the good work you have done so far. But, and I think I alluded to it in one of my responses, you have got to believe and trust that I am here to add, to embellish, improve, contribute to what I am seeing here. So you need to work with them in a way that they can trust and be like, okay, give this young king a chance to express himself. But they are watching closely because they don't want me to fail. God forbid, if I fail, the failure is on them as well. You're free to.
Right. And obviously, we have a lot of young people looking at you as a role model. You can't avoid that because you're already now in it. You're a public figure. What advice do you have for young Africans striving for leadership and impact in their communities?
Something I am big on is, and has always been, identity. When you are sure and confident of who you are. We were just speaking about old people and, you know, trying to get into it. Fortunately or unfortunately for me, primogeniture brought me here, succession. For other people who are not dealing with matters of thrones and succession, it's different. Their path to the position is different. But I will say they must bet on themselves, invest in themselves. It's not a thing of arrogance or being cocky, because there's also heavy humility that is involved, but confident in your identity, what God has called you to be. And there's a Bible verse that comes to mind that don't let them despise you because of your youth. Young people have done great things in this world, in all the eras you can imagine. People under 30, people under 20, definitely people under 40. And there's no reason why now that we're in 2025, you know, that young people are looking to be encouraged. There are so many examples in the world of young people who have been doing things and are still doing things. So oftentimes when you just do a little bit of reading, you will find the inspiration and the examples that you are looking for. I am humbled to hear that some look at me, my emergence, my story as one that encourages young people. And from this platform, I will continue to encourage, advocate for young people to be given the opportunity. And I hope that the young people who are given that opportunity are prepared. In Nigeria, we have seen many instances. I don't know if it's like that in Zimbabwe or other African countries where young people clamor for an opportunity. And then unfortunately, the one young person that it falls upon may not do well with it. And then that it now becomes the justification of, oh, this is why we don't allow young people come in. And that's not really fair, you know, because one person was not prepared. Preparation is key. Humility is key. And at the same time, confidence, investment in yourself. Because when the time comes, you have to be ready. And the time will come.
And how can the same young people now contribute to the preservation and modernization of traditional leadership structures? I know you mentioned this, that we should not forget the past, right, but we should carry it along to the future. Right. So how are you ensuring that at least young people in Wari, or rather just in Africa, can contribute to that preservation?
Starting with the traditional institution, we cannot afford to be seen as something that is meant for the older people, which is what is the narrative by and large. It is seen like, oh, there are older people who do not want to move forward with the reality. And I know the young people today are very much driven or inspired by what they see in media, what's happening in the West. And whenever I have this opportunity, I like to point them away from the West and point them in the East. When you look at what's happening in Thailand, when you look at what's happening in Japan, these are places where there is still a traditional institution. There is a king in Thailand, there's an emperor in Japan who very much has not, his influence and authority has not been diminished by the modern world and technological advances. In fact, these two countries are very heavy in young people being involved in technology. And yet with their technological involvement, they still carry the traditional institution along, still revered, and they are still drawing inspiration from those traditional institutions. In Wari Kingdom, we are very much pro young people, very much so. There is always space in the king's boat, and the king's boat is not only for old people, it is for the young as well, who are willing to stand up and say, Baba, I have something I can contribute. Come and show me what you can do.
Right. I am so sure they're happy to hear that. But before we wrap up, I would like to congratulate you for being named amongst the 100 most reputable people in Africa. What did that mean for you? How did you feel?
Well, to be very honest, I was surprised because I did not know such a thing existed. It does bring a little bit of pressure. So I am honored, and I hope and pray that, you know, God gives me the capacity to live up to that honor.
Thank you so much, the Olu of Wari, His Majesty Ogiame Atuwase III, for joining us here on DW Africa Exclusive. We appreciate your time.
Thank you.
I hope you have enjoyed that exclusive discussion I had with the Olu of Wari, Ogiame Atuwase III. That's it for this edition of Africa Link. Remember, you are not just a listener, but a part of our community, and your engagement can shape the direction of our discussions. We value your insights and encourage you to share your thoughts with us. Please remember to follow so you can catch all of the Africa Link podcast episodes. This podcast was co-produced and edited by Isaac Mugabe. My name is Josie Mahachi. Thanks for listening. Until the next one, it's bye for now.
DW, made for minds.